You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 84. So, got quite a bit of an episode for you this week. A lot of news from Mobile World Congress. So I'll be going through the news there and a bunch of new devices that were announced. No app review, so I'm going to default back to this week in custom live wallpaper. So something new that I came up with. Oh, I'll say new in quotes. So something I came up with as a layout for myself that I've actually liked for this particular week. It's pretty straightforward compared to what I've done before, so I thought figured I'd share that. And then for the entertainment, a bit of news, what I watched, a film review. And then we'll round it out with the Star Wars profile. It's directly related to a novel I'm reading, so if you follow me on Goodreads, then you already know about, or it's kind of a hint there. So with that, I'll jump right into it. So for this week, the theme is brands. So this is a way for a company to distinguish using a symbol, mark, image, or some other phrase to differentiate themselves from other companies in the same or similar markets. As a legal protection, a brand is protected by a trademark and is usually a company's most valuable asset because that's basically the visual and first cue as to who that company is and kind of how they market their products. It also is created from the company's brand identity, so how it wants to be viewed publicly, how they want it to be represented in a visual form. And an easy way for a company to know that, okay, this product is officially endorsed by this company, created by this company, and this is something they stand behind and are passionate about. And then it's used to make that brand memorable and appealing. So things like Nike's swoosh logo for Just Do It, Apple, Google's colorful logo, things like that. So just a way for a company to be unique in a market where they have competitors. So with that being said, I'll jump right into this week's tech news. So to start it off, Google Spaces is going to be shut down on April 17th with read-only mode starting March 3rd. So that read-only mode, most likely as soon as most of you hear this episode, will have already started. But you have until April 17th to view whatever content you have there. Google Assistant will be rolling out to all Android devices running Android Nougat and Marshmallow or higher. It'll start with users in the United States or English users in the United States with Australia, United Kingdom, and Germany coming after that. It'll be via an update to Google Play services. I actually haven't seen that update come out to my device just yet. So I don't know if I have it yet. I was hoping to have it by this episode to review it. I'm going to kind of see, or I haven't had a chance really to see how it's going to actually look, or I kind of needed to refresh my memory on a Google Assistant. Or to see how it differentiates by Google now. So I don't think I have it yet, but when I do, I'll play around with it a little bit more. As far as some device news from Mobile World Congress, BlackBerry announced the Key One. It's an Android 7.1.1 device with a 4.5-inch screen and a physical keyboard. It runs a Snapdragon 625 octa-core 2 GHz processor. It has 3 GB of RAM, 32 GB of storage, which can be expanded to 2 TB. A 12-megapixel rear camera, an 8-megapixel front camera, a 35500 mAh battery with quick charge 3 and USB-C. So a pretty good device, I don't want to necessarily say high range or mid range, but somewhere in the middle. So if you are looking for a BlackBerry device or an Android keyboard or an Android device with a physical keyboard, then this may be the device for you. Motorola announced two Moto devices. The first is the Moto G5. It's an Android 7 device with a 5-inch screen, Snapdragon 430 processor at 1.4 GHz. And an octa-core processor, 32 gigabytes of storage in Latin America, and 16 gigs in the rest of the world, which can be expanded to 128 gigabytes, 2 or 3 gigs of RAM, 13 megapixel rear camera, 5 megapixel front camera, and a 2800 milliamp hour battery, so a relatively low to mid-range device. For a slightly higher-end device, there's a Moto G5 Plus, and it runs Android 7 as well. but has a 5.2-inch screen, Snapdragon 625 2GHz octa-core processor, 16/32 or 64 gigs of storage, which can be expanded up to 128GB, 2, 3, or 4GB of RAM, 12MP rear camera, 5MP front camera, and a 3000mAh battery, so a pretty solid mid-range device, decent battery size and all of that. Both devices are not running the latest Snapdragon processor, but they have enough good specs and are running the latest version of Android, so you get a good performance via software and hardware. You get a LG also announced the LG G6 this week. It runs Android 7, has a 5.7-inch screen, Snapdragon 821 processor, 32 or 64 gigs of storage, which can be expanded to 2TB, 4 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs of RAM, has a 13MP rear camera, 5MP front camera, 3300mAh battery with USB-C charging equipped with Charge 3. So as far as the device announcements this week, that's probably the closest one in comparison for specs to the OnePlus 3T, which is the device that I have. So the three major differences actually are the expandable storage up to 2TB on the LG or the G6. The 3T has up to 128 gigs of storage. There's a RAM difference, so the OnePlus 3T has 6 gigs of RAM versus a 4 in the G6. And then more or a higher front and back camera on the 3T at 16MP, whereas the G6 goes up to 13 in the back and 5 in the front. Batteries are comparable. The charging is about the same, so you have certain trade-offs there, but they both have the same Snapdragon 821 processor. So overall, I want to say they're both up there as far as comparability. The screen size is the only other major differentiation at a 0.2-inch screen size difference, so it depends on if that matters to you. As of this recording, the OnePlus 3T Android 7.1.1 beta build is rolling out, so that should be coming out soon in final form, so I don't know about the G6 timetable, but that would be the other differentiating factor there. In other news, though, Samsung announced a Galaxy Tab S3. This is an Android 7 tablet with a 9.7-inch screen, Snapdragon 820 processor, 32 gigs of storage, 4 gigs of RAM, 13MP rear camera, 5MP front camera, 6000mAh battery with USB-C charging. So, a decent enough tablet there, running a more recent version of Android. So, if Samsung tablets are a thing for you, then definitely worth checking out. Nokia announced 3 new devices this week. They're all Android, or as far as I can tell, they're all Android 7 based devices. The first one is a Nokia 3 with a 5-inch screen, a 1.3GHz quad-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of storage with expandable storage, and an 8MP front and rear camera. The Nokia 5 has a 5.2-inch screen with 2 gigs of RAM as well, 16 gigs of storage. With expandable storage, 13MP rear camera, 3000mAh battery, and Android 7 as well. I didn't see anything on the processor, so I'm not sure if it's the same one or a little bit faster. But you do get, or it's basically the same amount of RAM with a little slightly bigger screen and a slightly better camera. And I'm not sure about the battery difference, but slightly more features. The last one is the Nokia 6. It has a 5.5-inch screen, 3 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage with expandable storage, a 16MP rear camera, and Android 7. So, a slightly more spec there. Same thing here. I'm not sure as far as a processor speed, but you do get more RAM and more storage. So, look out for one of those devices if you want to go back to traditional Nokia devices. This week, Google announced that they'll be launching a TV streaming service coming soon. It'll be called YouTube TV, and it'll be its own standalone app with the same name. It'll be at the moment it's $35 a month with select local and cable channels. So you'll get your, I think it was like Fox and CBS or something like that. There's 2 or 3 local channels, so I didn't make note of which ones there are there. And then 40 cable TV channels. So going to the YouTube TV site will give you all those channels. I didn't see Comedy Central on there, but because I do watch The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, that was kind of my thing. Like, if it had that, then it would be all set. And they do have sci-fi on there, so that's the other channel. So having those two channels may be worth it. The other feature set, though, to help differentiate it with, for example, CBS All Access and other similar streaming TV services, is that they offer unlimited cloud-based DVR, so you can save and have those, as far as I could tell, available anywhere. I'm not sure about offline watching or playback, but there is unlimited storage, so you could, in theory, record as much as you want and have that all available to you to watch. So I'm kind of curious, and then at $35 a month, it seems like a good plan. I'm not, for me, it may be worth it, especially because you could watch it anywhere you go, and you're not necessarily tied to a television set or a set-top box. And you have the cloud storage, you have that on-demand DVR availability as well. But I kind of wanted Comedy Central on there as well. But at the price point, it seems like it's not too bad, especially if you combine that with streaming services like Amazon Prime or Netflix. So I'll use Amazon Prime as an example, mostly because it's, I think, about $8 or $9 a month there. So for about even 40, let's say 45, even $45 a month, you get local channels, some cable channels, and streaming service as well. So you get those hand in hand. I'm not sure what Netflix is at price as, but assuming it's around $10 a month, same thing there. From $45, you get local channels, other cable channels, and streaming. So it seems like a good price point, and it is priced, or as far as I can tell, based on my current plan at home, that is priced lower than a cable TV box. So might be worth a shot. The app, when it's released, will be available for Android and iOS. So as long as you can install and have one of those two platforms, you're good to go. I already mentioned this earlier, but for OnePlus 3T users, I'm not sure about OnePlus 3 users, but OxygenOS Open Beta 3 was released this week. It updates the OnePlus 3T to Android 7.1.1. And then along with that update, it also improves the gallery and fixes some bugs. So you do get the latest version of Android. I did install it on my 3T, and I'm playing around with it. So far, mostly stable. I did have one random reboot. Bluetooth was disabled for some reason. I'm not sure if that's part of the update or I hit something when I was in that time frame or whatever, but so far it's pretty good. Performance has been very good. I haven't really tested battery life perfectly or like specifically to check it out, but so far I've had no major drawbacks compared to the prior stable build on Android 7. So far, good things. We'll see how the final rollout happens, or what happens with the final rollout, but I'm liking it so far. And then it does have one feature with the long screenshot feature, which basically allows you to start a screenshot, push the button, it'll automatically scroll the page, and you touch the button to stop, and you get a long screenshot. So I'll probably do a review when I get a chance and share that on YouTube as well. In other news, though, Google Allo got updated with easier searches for GIFs, so animated emojis, and integration with Google Assistant, so look out for that update. And finally, Google Photos got updated with auto white balance, long pressing to see original images while editing, and then shift R to rotate images on the web, so look out for that. So if you see our images are automatically looking better or automatically color corrected for white balance, then that is why. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'm going to do a quick review of a custom live wallpaper that I made this week. Probably sometime this weekend, if I get a chance, I'll share the file online somewhere and put a post to it on the website. But this week, I made a custom live wallpaper where I just had a simple layout for music and weather forecast. The only differentiation that's going to happen between the video and this review is that I updated the background image a little bit, but the first thing I did was I started this custom live wallpaper with a black background image, so it was just the album art and the media info and weather info, but I then set a wallpaper to add a little bit more color to it, and I liked that. And then I thought, you know what, why not use a formula that I did for the album art? And with a little bit of blurring, now whenever I'm listening to a podcast or music and the album art comes through, I can have the album art as a solid image, but I can also have my background update so that it blurs the background a little bit and dims it a little bit. So I now have a changing wallpaper based on my album art. So with my background image that I have in the video, I set the blur to 50. With the album art that I'm using with the live wallpaper, I have the blur still at 50 or so, and I have the dim set at 75, so that or so approximately. So that way the white text that I have in overlay still stands out as sharp as possible. I also have all my elements fading in when my device unlocks. I set the fade time to 5, so it's not too much of a delay, but it still has that cool effect of fading in when I unlock. From here, I added the album art, so I selected the image component. I changed the bitmap selection to formula, and when you go to music information, you can pick the media, or sorry, the cover art formula, so it pulls the album art from whatever media you're listening to. I have my width set to 600. The max is 700, so I have a little bit of a frame around it, but you can adjust accordingly if you want a bigger or smaller image, or depending on where you're placing it and what other background images you have. I also included media control, so previous, play, pause, and forward. Previous obviously skips to the previous track for music, and forward for the next track. And then for podcasts, I have Pocket Cast set to rewind 10 seconds and forward 30 seconds, so it works well there. And then I pull in the track information, so artist, title, track position, and troll track time. So it's a regularly updating bit of information there as well. For the weather, I have the current weather icon and current temperature, and then the same day condition with high and low temperatures. So that's all together in one grouping on the left. And then on the right, I have a 3-day forecast with high temperature, low temperature, and the condition. And it's separated by a divider. I kind of use this layout to follow what I had in my HD widgets 3-day forecast, with a slight adjustment so that it fit properly and I don't have to really worry about overflow and things like that. But it's a layout that works for me and that I like, so I'm using that. As far as exceptions and usability go, this layout works best with Google Play Music and Pocket Cast as far as pulling album art, the track time, and total track time updating. Pandora and Amazon Music work, but Pandora for some reason does not want to pull the album art, but the track time does work, so it's okay there. For Amazon Music, it pulls the album art, but it doesn't like to read the track time, so that's kind of a bummer there. So it depends on which one you use. I didn't test it with Apple Music or Spotify or any of the other ones, so I'm not sure how well those work. But for me, I'm trying to switch over to Google Play Music a little bit more for music streaming, so if I made that transition, it works out well. For Amazon Music, I use that on and off as well. So track time is not a huge thing, but it is nice to have, especially since I went to the time of creating this layout. So it's kind of the ups and downs there, but since I do have a lot of my purchase music on Google Play Music and I listen to use Pocket Cast a lot, it works out best for me there. So if you have any questions or comments or want the custom live wallpaper for yourself, just let me know. I'd be happy to send it your way. As I said, I'll try and post it online at some point with a screenshot so you kind of see what's going on there, but that's the current. But basically, if you want it, just let me know or I'll share links to it when I get a chance. So with that, I'll jump into the entertainment news for this week. So to start it off with some news, a few trailers were released this week, namely those for Alien Covenant, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Notably for the Pirates of the Caribbean trailer, we see a young Captain Jack Sparrow, so it's probably going to be origin slash ending story. The trailer said will indicate that's the last movie in the series, so we'll see how that works out. Terminator 2 3D got a release date, in that it's going to release to theaters on August 25th, 2017. And finally, Star Wars Rebels has been renewed for Season 4, so we get to see more of their adventures there. As far as what I watched, I had a chance to continue watching MacGyver Season... So MacGyver received... I watched Season 1, Episode 17, Ruler. I watched Star Wars Rebels, Season 3, Episode 17, Through Imperial Eyes. So we've learned that Admiral Thrawn now knows who the traitor is. We get to see Admiral Yularen as part of the Imperial Security Bureau, or ISB. I also had a chance to watch Black Sails Season 4, Episode 5, as well as The Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 11, Hostiles and Calamities, and The Expanse Season 2, Episode 6, Paradigm Shift. So last week, as far as movies, or with that, I'll jump into this week's film review. So last week I didn't have anything to watch and I wanted to rent a movie, so I decided to watch Jack Reacher Never Go Back, especially on the heels of watching John Wick Chapter 2. So basically I decided on this just because I saw the show up for rental on Amazon Prime. Actually, I'm not sure if it was Amazon Prime or Google Play Movies, but I saw the preview for it, or that it was available to stream, and that I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen much of the trailers for it, so I decided to give it a watch, see how good or bad it was. So I figured I'd watch and do a review. So the movie itself released on October 21st, 2016, with a runtime of 118 minutes. A summary of the film is that Jack Reacher must uncover the truth behind a major government conspiracy in order to clear his name. On the run as a fugitive from the law, Reacher uncovers a potential secret from his past that could change his life forever. It got an IMDb rating of 61%, as well as a Rotten Tomatoes score of 37% by critics and a 44% by the audience, so generally not very well favored, even hit or miss by, or in the best case, hit or miss by IMDb's rating. So overall for me, it was super slow. Even the first one I actually kind of enjoyed. I don't know if just because it was the first one may have been slow and because it was a new film that I like it, but this one didn't really seem to capitalize much or progress much compared to the first one. And especially on the heels of watching it compared to John Wick, Chapter 2 kind of pulled it off well versus Chapter 1. So even on that comparison, Jack Reacher Never Go Back didn't really seem that much of progress. I kind of wanted to see, or if the film, I guess in retrospect, was more about the guy that was kind of like Jack Reacher but the evil version, if it was more about that, that might have been more interesting. But this didn't really capitalize much as much as the first one did. Otherwise, though, the only standard operating procedure in the whole movie seemed to be the Sarah Connor Handbook for Escaping from Places. So we have a hospital escape scene, and it kind of, or sorry, no, the jail escape scene, which was a good scene in general, I guess, but to me, it reminded me of the Terminator 2 the psychiatric ward escape scene. So I don't know, it just seemed okay. It served its purpose to get Kobe Smulders out of prison, but from there, that was about it. It just seemed way too easy to escape, and far too easy for Jack Reacher to avoid the cameras. White blocked the major's email after she escapes and tries to access it as a fugitive. So the thing that bothered me here was that if Kobe Smulders is, even though she's convicted and she's still undergoing trial and all that, if she is in that time frame of being under review or whatever, why is her email still active and why can she still access it? Shouldn't it be something where it's unable to be accessed and locked out pending further review or anything like that? And then on this note, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, but how can we inject Superman versus evil Superman? So basically, the premise of the movie, or to get Jack Reacher to do what they want, came down to the evil Jack Reacher guy trying to hold his supposed daughter hostage, which all falls apart in the end. But overall, I mean, this is probably the part of the movie that could have worked out a little bit better, but it turned into Taken, basically, where the guy was trying to kidnap his daughter and didn't really work out. But by the end of the movie became the equalizer of illegal narcotics operations. So we have Jack Reacher realizing that the guns are the key, and rather than the guns being the actual thing that they're trying to find and figure out what happened to, it turns out to be drugs, because something didn't add up and he decided to start thinking and figuring it out why. So I think though, in the end, the movie came down to the only, basically the second half or even the last third of the movie was probably the only part that mattered and was of particular note. And that I actually liked. The first half of it didn't really seem to work out too well. Or at least compared to the first one, it didn't really work out as well as I expected. And I think it probably didn't even start off on the right foot, because we have the movie starting off with Jack Reacher beating up a bunch of people. And it's along the lines of the bar fight scene from the first movie. So at first I thought maybe they're starting off there again, and why are they even showing that? But it turned out to be a different scene entirely. So for me, I'd probably give it right in that 50 to 60% range. It was a decent enough movie. It was, in general, it was well made. They rounded it out well, but it could have been a lot better. And as far as this kind of movie goes, I actually preferred John Wick Chapter 2 to Jack Reacher Never Go Back. So on that note, I'll jump into this week's Star Wars profile. So I want to say last week, maybe about a week and a half ago, I started reading the first book in the Star Wars Aftermath series. So this is a series of books that takes place right after Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. just because I finished reading, I forgot what the book, I think it was Ouroboros Station Breaker Book 2 or whatever. I finished reading that. I finished reading whatever book I was reading before that. So since I hadn't had a chance to read this, I figured I'll start reading this trilogy. So started reading the book, and we were introduced to a character called Mr. Bones. I picked this particular character because it's related to Snap Wexley, the character we see in Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. He's known as, his full actual name is Temmin Wexley, and he builds himself a pseudo-robot protector. Not along the lines of a C-3PO, but an interesting protector nevertheless. So Mr. Bones is a heavily modified B-1 battle droid. I'll say constructed in quotes by Temmin Wexley. This droid is actually a first generation Federation droid. So he got the parts, put them together, and modified the software and hardware to protect him and have certain better abilities. He was built on Wexley's home planet of Akiva and served as his bodyguard and companion. He did have a sadistic personality that showed up when attacking his victim, so he did it calmly and patiently, but would sometimes break into whistling a tune while he did that. After Snap, or Temmin and his mother escaped Akiva after the uprising, Mr. Bones accompanied them on various missions to help out with those missions as well. And at various points during his life, he did meet Han Solo and Wedge Antilles. He was eventually rebuilt and reprogrammed to move like General Grievous and Ryloth Dancers. So he had even further extensive programming done and abilities. But basically, he was a battle droid who had the ability to use various weapons, like I want to say a vibro sword or a sword of some sort, as well as various kinds of blasters and things like that. So he was a multifunction droid and able to do more than what his original programming allowed, and had more friendly and personable traits as well. So he was meant to be friendly to mainly Temmin, but to be okay with anyone who Temmin did not consider a hostile threat. So that's all there is for that. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything like that, you can email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can find me on Twitter at patelN01.com, and you can find all links, past episodes, and all of that good stuff on the website at patelN01.com. You can, of course, find video reviews and the screencast on YouTube at youtube.com/patelN01. And, of course, if you like this show and want to find more shows on the Geek.io network, be sure to visit geek-io.net. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.